given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ParaX, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Step outside of your comfort zone. See the world with a whole new perspective. Join us and experience the unexplained on The Paranormal View.
And welcome, everybody, to The Paranormal View right here on the ParaX Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for being here tonight, those in the chat room, and those listening from around the world. We appreciate each and every one of you. And I want to wish everybody a good new year. Looks like everybody made it through all the festivities, and glad you're taking the time to spend it here with us tonight. We got a great show lined up. And during the show, if you do have questions, you can private chat them to Ceiling Cat, Jeffrey Gould, or Cat, or myself, and we will get those right over to our guest. Now, if you're listening from somewhere else other than here in the chat room, feel free to come on over and join us. Go to para-x.com, click on the live chat button. You'll be in with all these wonderful people. If you are listening from somewhere else and you have questions, but you don't want to come into the chat room, you can send us a question to theparanormalview@gmail.com, and we will get that question answered for you. So tonight we have with us Kat Kloko.
Happy New Year, everyone.
We have Barbara Duncan.
Howdy, folks.
And we have Jeffrey Gould.
Happy New Year, and this is my fifth anniversary as co-host.
Well, great. That's right. It started today.
Yeah. January. What was it? The first on the 2011.
The Big Meltdown.
Yeah, the Big Meltdown show.
The Legendary Meltdown?
The Legendary Meltdown. Yeah, that was good. So, but yes, I'm glad Jeff has been with us. I'm glad that Cece wanted to do the show with us, and I'm glad Kat Kloko wanted to work with us too. So we have a great crew. We're looking for another fantastic year and hope everyone enjoys it and likes dropping by and being with us.
Yes.
We have a great guest tonight. Got lots of good stories. And did you guys have anything good happen over your New Year's Eve?
Didn't die.
That's always a great thing. No, go ahead, Jeff.
I was going to say we actually lost power. Apparently a transformer blew up on the nearby highway, and they were saying, oh, won't get it back till 3 a.m., but fortunately they got it back within a few hours.
So we didn't freeze. Good. Yeah, I celebrated New Year's with my entire family. They all came to visit, and we were in our tiny little house. It was very cozy, but we had a great New Year's Eve.
Did anyone see your ghost?
No ghosts were seen. They were with us, but they just did not decide to appear. So however, I think I did sneak a peek of one of them last night on my way downstairs. They like our basement. It's not a creepy basement, though. Unlike a lot of the basements in the book we'll be talking about tonight, This is a purely, it's a very pleasant basement.
So your cats are like, ghosts are like cats. They're
like, yeah, they're kind of like
company,
cats.
Company, huh? Run away.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. I was just going down the stairwell after letting Mickey use the restroom, and I saw a little shadow person head peek around the door, and I'm like, yeah, I see you. Don't bother me. I'm going back to bed.
Wasn't your shower ghost.
No, I don't know who it was.
All anyway. Right. Jeff, why don't you take and introduce our guest?
Well, tonight's guest is freelance journalist Al Baltrusis, who writes for various publications, including but not limited to Boston Spirit Magazine and Stuff. Never heard of Stuff I'll have to check on that. He teaches writing and journalism classes at the Boston Center for Adult Education. His blog, Loaded Gun Boston, I love that name, is an online destination focusing on the latest crop of made-in-Boston films, showcasing the behind-the-scenes buzz surrounding Hollywood East, as well as the people, places, and products featured. Sam moonlights as a tour guide with Haunted Boston, highlighting the city's historical haunts. And he shares his home with a mischievous female spirit with an affinity for sharp objects, who Sam jokingly calls his scissor sister. Say that five times fast. Sam's first book, Ghosts of Boston, Haunts of the Hub, is hitting shelves in it already hit the shelves in early September 2012. Anyway, welcome and Happy New Year, Sam Baltus.
Hello.
Need to update.
Good to be on the show, guys.
Hello.
As you can tell,
apparently he's a couple of books behind there. His first book, which was several books ago.
That
whole intro was from 2011. But a lot's happened since then. That I moved out of the house that you mentioned, the one in Davis Square with the scissor sister. That I moved out in 2013 and moved to my new place in Assembly Row in Somerville.
Wow! Even I keep my website as up to date as I can.
Yeah, mine is probably out of date.
Yeah, I have no idea where you got that from, because from my first book.
I got that, I believe, from your loaded gun website.
Oh yeah, that was from like 4 years ago. But yeah, with that said, I mean, I've written 4 books since then.
Yeah, I've got them all listed, and I started to do a synopsis of each show, so all of your books are going to be on the page with links to their Amazon, so people can go buy them.
Yes.
Awesome.
All right. I know we got lots of questions. Your book, 13 Most Haunted Places in Massachusetts, Most Haunted in Massachusetts. You've been to all those, and the way that you wrote it, I guess, is your kind of take on going through it and talking with the investigators and everything with these places. And a lot of them is fairly well known. The first one that you had in the book called Most Haunted Number One is the S.K. Pierce Mansion.
And that is famous! Right.
What is the history on that?
Well, I mean, with that house, kind of to give you the backstory with it, I didn't know about it, and I don't watch all those TV shows that most people watch, and so I basically didn't really know much about it. My friends Rachel and Tina from Paranormal Expeditions, they were doing an investigation there for a pilot for a TV show. And I saw the picture on Facebook, and I'm like, what the hell the heck is that? I was having this recurring dream of a woman on the second floor looking out the window of this house in my dream. And that was the house from my nightmares for many years. It turns out my friend Joni Mahan, she wrote a book called Bones in the Basement, and it was the same house. So, it's kind of snowball from there. And so the Haunted Victorian in Gardner, I was able to go out and visit it. Definitely, it's changed hands this past year. Was formerly, it's currently being renovated right now for overnight guests, and they're turning it to a haunted attraction. So the history is that it's I believe the most haunted location in Massachusetts. I did reach out to Joni Mahan to write the introduction of out the house to get the historical backstory to it.
And what's the name of the mansion? Said it. Henry said it kind of fast. S.K. something?
Pierce Mansion.
S.K. Pierce Victorian Mansion in Gardner, Mass.
Mm-hmm. And so I just moved here to New England, to Rhode Island, which is right next to Massachusetts. And the S.K. Pierce Mansion was one of the first ones suggested to me. And it's a popular haunt. I won't say popular, but well-known, locally well-known location.
It wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't for years. I mean, it like you just moved here, right? And it was one of those things that people, I guess, knew about, but it was like that haunted house in Gardner, Mass. And then it got picked up by all the shows like Ghost Hunters and Ghost Adventures. So now it's popular, but it wasn't popular. It was in a really bad state of disrepair for many, many years. And then they started doing renovations. It was bought by a gentleman named Rob Conti, who is doing the renovations now. They're doing a fantastic job renovating it.
Now,
so it's popular now, but it wasn't popular last year.
Well, I knew about it from Spooky South Coast, and they've had different owners on through the years. But anyway, let's see. And I think, what is it? Anyway, so what would make it, what's happened in the house to make it so haunted?
Well, again, it started with the dream. If you read the book, you'll get sort of like the backstory. It was about me kind of going back to the location that kind of freaked me out. And I had someone come up to me saying, if you go to that house, it'll take the breath out of you. The paranormal investigators who did the investigation there that kind of inspired me to get to go there, they had that same sensation happen to them. And you know, Jeremy Meehan's book, Both in the Basement, really goes into the history of that location. But there's bones in the basement. There's a negative energy in the basement. There's a lot of residual energy, and there's also intelligent energy as well.
Yeah, now, I seen also at one time that place had been for sale. Or is it still for sale?
No, again, it was purchased by Rob Conti this last year and it's being renovated now. So it was for sale, and that's when it became like the most talked about haunted place in America. That was like 6 months ago.
Now,
I'm intrigued by the fact that you said that this lady came to you in a dream. Obviously, you weren't in the house at the time, so she must have figured out that you were going to be there. Did you ever figure out what she was saying in your dream? Something called like Sephna?
Yeah, she was. You could see her silhouette, and she had sort of like a old school like school marm outfit, and kind of her hair in a bun. And she was seeing what sounded like Sephnock. And I'm like, what does Sephnock mean? And there was a guy. She was kind of scowling over a man, and she was throwing things out the window. And the man was. He was kind of crouched beneath her, and it turns out she's saying, confess.
Now, I was reading some stuff about it, and supposedly one of the spirits is a nanny. One of the spirits is a murdered prostitute, and you're supposed to also see a little boy in a mirror.
Right. Yeah, Maddie Cornwell is the woman that I believe was reaching out to me. She is sort of the caretaker of the house. And, again, this house terrifies me. And so I didn't spend a lot of time there. I'm planning on spending more time there, but I relied more on people who did investigate the house to kind of tell me about the spirits there. But yeah, Maddie Cornwell is the nanny ghost. She supposedly crossed over in a cleansing ritual like a year and a half, 2 years ago. And then the boy, they don't know where the boy comes from. And then there's also a ghost in the basement who is a negative entity.
Now, have you been able to figure out exactly what it is about the house that, I mean, I feel the same thing too, going into Redwood Forest for some strange reason. There's just something about it that gets me. Is there something that you just can't put your finger on that bothers you about the house so much?
No, I mean, now I know. I mean, before it came in my dreams. And I don't really rely on other, like the TV shows and stuff to kind of like guide me to these locations. I let the ghosts reach out to me, and I felt like it was calling me. And I felt like Maddie, for whatever reason, it was falling apart. My theory is perhaps it was because it was in such a bad state of disrepair. She was kind of calling out the sensitives to reach out to them for whatever reason. And I think horrible things happened in that house. I mean, I think that there was stuff that was reported. The prostitute murder, we can't really confirm that, so it's not based on facts. But yeah, I mean, there things happened in that house, and a lot of those things are documented in Jody Mann's book.
Have you come across other sensitives who have come across her in dreams as well?
Yeah, I mean, because of writing this book, 13 Most Haunted, Joni mentioned that there's a gentleman who had similar dreams, and he's actually featured in the book, and she was singing this sort of Irish folk song in the dream, and he had that same experience as well. So, yeah, I'm not the only one that she reached out to.
Well, that's great confirmation if you're hearing the same song.
Yeah, it's like an Irish folk song, and I'm like, I didn't really know what it was exactly, and then Joni was like this, you know, it's like she's in the book, and I didn't even know that the woman's name was Maddie Cornwell. That came up through the research with Joni.
Wow. I'm sorry, did I interrupt him?
No,
you're
not. No.
Kat and I are both having audio issues in our headsets.
Yeah, but...
And he is on a cell phone, so that will have some distortion sometimes.
Well, no, the chat room is hearing everything okay. It's just the audio is cutting in and out with me.
Oh, okay.
Like all of a sudden there was this long silence. I thought I got dropped, and then all of a sudden out of nowhere I hear prostitute out of Henry.
Maybe saying something to you.
What?
Must be a mischievous spirit playing with the words.
Well, now that can happen. Very much so. Yeah. Now there's some good stories, places in this book. And Kat being over there fairly close to a lot of them, I bet you're going to try and go to some of them.
I've already been to a few in the book.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
Which one have you been to?
Well, I've been to Boston Common. And I was just there on Tuesday with my entire family. A fun fact for our listeners, if you've seen my Facebook page, that photo was taken in front of the Central Burying Ground on Boston Common. So I love Boston. It's my favorite city.
There's a Twitter account called Awful Laws, and it lists that by law you have to cross Boston Commons with a shotgun because bears.
Yeah, I could see that a few centuries ago.
That would be a Bruin.
A Bruin.
Cruising for a Bruin, huh?
But I've also been on the USS Salem. That's in Quincy, Massachusetts. And I was just there in September. So, and had a paranormal experience on there as well. So, yeah, it's... There's a whole bunch of interesting places. A lot of them I've heard about, but... I'm friends with Jeff Belanger, and he talks about, like, the Houghton Mansion is always highlighted whenever he talks about anything. So, and then Lizzie Borden, so you can't move to Rhode Island, which is maybe 20 minutes, no matter where you live, away from Fall River, Massachusetts. And I haven't been there yet, but I hear a lot of stories.
Hmm.
I think the writers on Lizzie Borden just did a hatchet job. Oh, wait, I...
Ha-ha. But I also learned a lot, so I was able to get this book off of Amazon, and thank you Amazon Kindle, and I actually had never heard about the Hammond Castle though, and that looks like a very interesting building. But before we get into this, I have to say I am a fan of Frank Grace's photography. And as soon as I opened this book, I was like, it's Frank! So, I've met him.
Yeah, Frank.
He's a great guy, does wonderful photography. And how did you get him to... How do I want
to
say
do the
this?
Photos.
How did these wonderful photos get into your wonderful book?
Yeah, Frank Grace he's definitely, in my opinion, one of the best paranormal photographers out in the field. And I've been a journalist for 20 years, so I've worked with a lot of photographers. I've been an editor of a magazine, editor of newspapers, and that sort of thing. So I know how to spot a good photographer, and he's one of the best in the business. And I just reached out. My third book, Ghost of Salem, was a pretty big hit. And at my book signing in Salem, I actually invited Frank to come out to meet him because I love his photographs, and he agreed to work on 13 Most Haunted, and he also is working on my next, I have three books coming out in 2016, and one of them is Haunted Boston Harbor. So he and I did a lot of work for Haunted Boston Harbor as well. So it was just kind of like a gradual, like me kind of reaching out to him, him getting to know me, and then us going out in the field and taking photos.
Oh, that is nice. I have his calendar hanging up in my kitchen from 2016. And
it's amazing.
Oh, his photography is great. So I encourage all of our listeners to go look up Frank Grace in his photography. But back to Hammond Castle. So I hear an insane scientist built this place.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Wait, what was the question? I'm sorry.
I hear an insane scientist, or at least the.
Eccentric scientist. Hammond, Mr. Hammond was actually one of the original kind of ghost hunters. He was really into the spiritualism movement of the late 1800s, and a renowned skeptic, like not skeptic, eccentric. He was extremely odd in the things that he did, and he built this amazing castle in Gloucester, and it just walk in and it's kind of hard to explain until you actually visit it. It's freakishly awesome. And you walk in, and he's got a lot of artifacts in there that he collected from all over the world. And he loved cats. So the legend is that he said that he wanted to be reincarnated as the cat. And of course, there are stray cats wandering, around Hammond Castle. So there's definitely a lot of mystery and a lot of was a ghost at Hammond Castle. And that was one of the things that locals know Hammond Castle. And they were like, make sure that's on the list. And that's, I would go regularly, but I visited right before ghost hunters did their investigation there. So it definitely is one of the more haunted places in the North Shore, and kind of not the most talked about.
Yeah, it's a huge place too. They do tours all the time. Do they have ghost hunter investigations?
Yeah, I mean they don't have paranormal investigations. They did have Ghost Hunters, the TV show, which is the TAP show,
right?
Come in a couple of years ago, and Adam Berry, who's in my first two books, was part of the Ghost Hunters team at the time, and I went to Hammond Castle for an article I was working on, and he, for some reason I just felt like it was going to be on, it should be investigated. And I'm like, I'm going to a place locally. And I'm like, are you going to Hammond Castle? And he's like, how did you know that? So I kind of intuitively knew that they were going to go investigate the Hammond Castle, and Josh Gates was part of the investigation. And they found a lot of stuff. I rarely watch the Ghost Hunters TV shows, but it was a really good investigation.
I don't remember seeing that one. I guess I'm going to have to try and look it up to watch it. Cause,
it was good. Yeah.
The pictures that, I seen of the castle, they're just amazing. I mean, that's a huge place.
It's one of those places that all the locals, if you grew up around here, or if you know people around here, they're like, they talked about Hammond haunting the castle and about sort of the legends associated with it. So it's one of those places that people have been to. It has a really huge haunted house event that they do every season. And it's one of the best in my opinion, in New England. It's very scary. So they have a lot of people who visit it just for Halloween. So they don't do paranormal investigations there, but they definitely, it's definitely a hot spot on Halloween.
So is one of the spirits that haunts the place, is it that of John Hayes Hammond?
Yeah, that's Mr. Hammond. That's the eccentric scientist. Yeah.
So does people see him in a certain area, or does he come out changed, trying to scare somebody?
No, I mean, he supposedly is reincarnated as a cat. My personal experience with there was in the Whisper Room. And the Whisper Room was designed by Henry Davis Sleeper. And it was this room that where you supposedly you would say something and someone across the room could hear because of the acoustics in the room were so amazing that you could hear what the person says across the room. Well, I heard what sounded like someone saying, look, look. And no one else was in the Whisper Room with me. And it kind of led me to a picture of Henry Davis Sleeper. And I'm assuming that whatever the ghost and the location was trying to tell me to maybe give credit to Sleeper. Because Sleeper was a designer. He was very flamboyant, kind of over the top. So people kind of overlooked him. And he, for whatever reason, I was guided to look at Henry Davis Sleeper's picture in the room as well. So it kind of, I had that experience that people have, it's more seeing, it's all different types of things. A cat has been spotted when they did the investigation on Ghost Hunters, a chandelier mysteriously moved back and forth. There are a lot of phantom footsteps, a lot of voices that are heard within the castle.
Now, his wife was a psychic. And did seances in the house. Was
right.
it in the Whisper Room that she did the seances? Do they know?
No, they had a setup in the Great Hall, and they did a lot of experiments. They would have psychics in a cage that would basically block out any other transmissions. I forget the name. It's an old
cage?
School spiritualism Faraday cage. Yeah, and they would have the psychics inside the cage, and they would do experiments inside the cage. So, yeah, they were very much involved with the paranormal.
That explains why the house might be haunted. God only knows what they brought in.
Yeah, exactly. I would probably leave a psychic imprint of some sort on the location.
And he's buried on the grounds, right? Mr. Hammond?
Yeah, he's buried on the grounds, right on the out. Yep, he's buried on the grounds.
With his wife, I assume. They're both buried back there? Interesting.
With the what?
His wife is buried with him?
Not that I know of. I mean, I think it's just him on the grounds.
Whoa, okay. Fascinating. That house looks... Somebody said it was the most haunted place ever they've been to, or the quintessential haunted house.
No, they were referring to the S.K. Pierce Victorian Mansion. Jody Meehan said that about the Victorian Mansion.
Okay.
Yeah.
Personally, this one sounds much more cool.
Well, it looks fantastic.
It does.
And yeah, and it's. I would call it more like a mansion looking at a larger photo of it. I was just like, wow. And I believe weddings can be
very Adams family-esque.
Very much so. Did Hammond build the castle or did he purchase it?
No, he built it. I mean, he had it built for him.
Yeah.
He was an inventor, so he had all these sort of patents out that made a lot of money. So he was sort of like a nouveau riche type that built this amazing castle in Gloucester.
Right.
And if you know the history of that area, like a lot of sort of like the cutting edge artistic types lived in that part of Gloucester. It was sort of a haven for the eccentric people, like the Addams Family type. So it was kind of a weird gathering of all sorts of people.
This was in the 1930s, right?
The turn of the century, so leading up to the 30s.
Right when the spiritualist movement was quite strong at that point.
Yeah, and he and his wife were revolutionary. They were very progressive in their approach to the paranormal.
I don't know if you know this, whether or not they belong to magical societies like the Golden Dawn or something along those lines.
I don't think so, but I know there was the beginnings of like different groups, like the Center for
Psychical
Scientific Research or Cyclical Yeah, exactly. I don't think they were involved with that, but I think that they were friends with all those people. So they were kind of a precursor to that, the spiritualism. They were in the middle of the spiritualism movement, and they had invited a lot of the people over to do seances and to do various experiments, but they were, I don't think that they were part of a specific group.
Oh, okay. That would make sense. I can't remember who the author of the Sherlock Holmes stuff.
Arthur Conan Doyle,
yeah, who traveled to the United States quite a bit, and he met up with Houdini, and it seems to me that most of society, the higher societies anyway, all knew psychics, they all went to seances, they all had that spiritualist...
Yeah, but on the one hand, you had Houdini, who was debunking spiritualism, and Doyle was a great believer of them, and the Fae.
Yeah.
The Fae folk. He was very much into fairies and such like that.
Houdini actually is a player in one of my upcoming books. He came to Boston. There was a woman who claimed to be psychic in Boston, and they had an ongoing. He was very adamant about saying that psychics are not real and trying to disprove them. Mm-hmm. And it's weird. I was actually I'm working on three books, and the one on New York City, I was at a hotel that's allegedly haunted in New York City, and I had a dream, and I woke up, and my photographer said, I said, Harry Houdini. So apparently I had a dream about Harry Houdini, and he's going to maybe appear in my next book. So,
Which hotel in Manhattan?
It's called the Jane Hotel. It was where the survivors of the Titanic stayed after they were survived. So after they were saved from the Titanic. So it's on the west side of Manhattan.
Huh. Wow. I was unaware of that place, and I used to live in New Jersey in Manhattan. We're right next to Manhattan.
Yeah, I lived in Manhattan for 8 years. I worked for MTV and VH1. And then I moved back here in 2007.
Well, I think what we'll do is go ahead and take a break. And we got lots more when we come back. So stay tuned, because I think that we might be talking about a place that's very well known, or should be, called the Bridgewater Triangle. So, Kat gets to take us out, don't you?
Yes, I do. So, it's a new year, and you are listening to The Paranormal View with your hosts, Henry Foister, Jeffrey Gould, Barbara Duncan, and myself, Kat Klogo. Our first guest this new year is Sam Batruis, author of several haunted history books, such as 13 Most Haunted in Massachusetts, the book we're talking about tonight, Ghosts of Salem, Ghosts of Boston, plus many more. There's more to come after the break.
It's always time for the dead to shine in Hollywood. The legendary Dearly Departed Tours has stepped up their ghostly game by offering the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour. Dearly Departed has long been an orb of hope in the paranormal world, having been featured on television's Haunted History and Haunted Collector. Their terrible tales have been made infamous in Marla Brooks' The Ghosts of Hollywood books. The new Ghosts and Legends Tour is a 10-block, 70-minute dusk-time stroll down the boulevard of broken dreams. You'll be guided through the golden age of Hollywood and see where the unearthly Bela Lugosi, Lon Chaney, and the calamitous Black Dahlia are still said to linger. You'll see Hollywood's gothic hotels, legendary theaters, and restaurants, never forgetting their permanent occupants. No stranger to investigations, Dearly Departed Tours has first-hand knowledge of some of these hauntings. For details of the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour, find Dearly Departed Tours on Facebook, dearlydepartedtours.com, or call 1-855-600-DEAD.
Don't go away. The Paranormal View will be right back.
Thank you. I am John Zaffis, and you are listening to Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network.
Hi, this is Mike from Mr. G's Ice Cream Store in Gettysburg, the most haunted ice cream store in town. Stop in and see us next time you're around. We feature 16 flavors of homemade ice cream made right here in the store. Look forward to seeing you.
So, you had a lucid dream about living in Atlantis, teaching telepathy, and you're wondering what it means. We can actually help. We are the School of Metaphysics, a 40-year-old international resource for people who have questions. Big, juicy, deep questions about life and death and everything in between. 16 branches in the U.S., self-guided study online, weekend courses, webinars, and books. Send us a telepathic fax or visit our website, www.som.org. This could be the start of something really interesting.
Ideal Event Management is your top-rated paranormal events organizer. They represent some of the biggest names in the paranormal community. Whether you need help putting together your event, looking for a celebrity, or just want to pump up the excitement, Ideal Event Management can help you. Contact Mark at 413-478-3642 or check out their website at idealeventmanagement.com. You'll be glad you did.
I found it at last! Marla's Sacred Cauldron. This is the legendary artifact that has been whispered about in hushed tones for hundreds of years, and now it's mine! All mine!
Who dares defile the sanctity of my castle walls? Step away from the cauldron, you impertinent, muddy metal maltworm.
Never! I've spent half my lifetime trying to discover your age-old secret of stirring the cauldron!
Oh, for Merlin's sake, that's no deep, dark secret. Just tune into the Para-X Radio Network Thursday nights at 9 o'clock Eastern for more cauldron stirring than you can shake a wand at.
Oh, well, in that case, I guess I don't need to take up any more of your time, so I guess I'll be going!
Not just yet. We've got a little unfinished business to take care of.
That's Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on the Para-X Radio Network.
Para-X Radio presents Real Persons of Genius.
Real Persons of Genius.
Today, we salute you, Mr. and Mrs. Para-X show host.
Mr. and Mrs. Para-X show host.
Armed with nothing more than a laptop and a microphone, you hit the air to scare the bejesus out of your audience.
What the hell was that noise?
Like a dog peeing on a fire hydrant, you always whet our appetite for more.
I just can't get enough.
Whether it's witches, ghosts, fairies, or Bigfoot, we admire your ability to set aside reality and believe anything anyone tells you.
Seek professional help.
So the next time you're kneeling in front of your 8x10 glossy of Dave and Tom lighting a candle, remember, if it wasn't for you, I might be able to sleep without the lights on.
Mr. and Mrs. Para-X Show.
Para-X Radio Network, powered by CBS.
And welcome back, everybody, to the Paranormal View. Tonight, our guest is Sam Beltrosis, author of 13 Most Haunted in Massachusetts. Welcome back, Sam.
Hello. Well, good to be back.
Before we all pack a car and have it yard.
That was a good moment. Pack the cast.
You don't have a Boston accent.
Yeah, I moved here. I went to college here in 1990. I actually had a Southern accent. When I came here, I was like, "Hey, y'all, I'm came from Florida," and they were like, "What the hell?" You know, so it was. I definitely have changed my. I kind of worked on my accent over the years. So, I don't have a Boston accent. I worked on. I did a lot of radio and television, so I don't have. I worked on not having an accent.
Everybody who vocalizes has an accent. It's just what accent it is.
Exactly. Yeah. And sometimes my Southern accent comes out. I'm like, "Hey, y'all," I'll start saying y'all.
I do that.
Quite. Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
A lot, Henry. Yes.
A lot.
There's a lot of things I say.
One of them is y'all.
Yeah.
Use. Let's talk a little bit about. Go ahead.
Do you say fixing at all? I'm fixing to go.
Well, yeah, I'm fixing to do a lot of things.
Well, I grew up in, Sam, I grew up in New Jersey, and our high school choir did an exchange with the choir in Woburn, Massachusetts.
Oh, really? That's true. I'm sure that was a riot.
Yeah, and the thing was, is we were joking about the fact that they refer to what we call soda as tonic and things like that. All the regionalism.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Go ahead.
No, the one thing that I definitely have picked up, I say wicked, and I know that a lot of locals don't say wicked, but I do. I'm like, I've kind of picked that up over the years, so that's the one thing I do say.
Yeah, wicked. That's one I've noticed. One of my.
Not the musical. Okay.
No. They just say wicked. Isn't like wicked cool or
it's wicked good.
Oh,
it's wicked good.
It's gotta be an adjective. So it's wicked, wicked something like wicked awesome or wicked good.
Yeah.
I'm sure wicked came from all the witches.
Yes, sure. But anyway, they say bubbler for a drinking fountain.
I've heard that bubbler.
Yeah. And I had read about it in my linguistic textbooks, but I never heard it in practice until class, because I go to school in Boston right now, and one of the students in my class went, "Hey, where's the bubbler?" And I was like, "What? You actually say this? I thought this was a cartoon thing." Nope. Anyway.
So I didn't know you go to school in Boston?
Yeah, I go to the Shoah Institute in Boston, and it's on Jamaica Plain, and next to the British School of Boston, and I go there for intensive Japanese classes. So
taking or teaching?
Taking this time.
No, Sam. Kat is our local Japanese linguist.
Yeah. I used to live in
Japan. That's
amazing. Yeah. But every Thursday, I'm up in Boston. So.
Close to meet up. Yeah. I lived in Jamaica Plain when I first moved back in 2007, but then I moved back to Somerville, and I've lived in Somerville since I've been back.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's fun. I love Boston. So. And speaking of driving through things to get to Boston, we have the Bridgewater Triangle.
Ooh.
Which, this is creepy though, because I have to take 95 from Providence to Boston, and that there's a tiny, tiny little sliver of the triangle that I guess around, was it Walpole? That, I think that's Walpole. I may be getting my cities mixed up, but anyway. Around there, and I remember driving through it during just highly congested traffic time and feeling really, really, really weird. And I asked one of my friends who's also a paranormal investigator here in Rhode Island and Massachusetts, and he goes, "Oh, yeah, that's the very edge of the Bridgewater Triangle. You were probably sensing just the strange aura that emanates out of this place." So.
Yeah, the Bridgewater Triangle is like one of those things that people know about it across, because there's been documentaries and all sorts of books written on it. And I've always kind of stayed away from that part of Massachusetts in my books. I've mainly focused on Boston and Salem and the North Shore. But for the 13 most haunted, Freetown's number two on my list, which is part of the Bridgewater Triangle.
Yeah. And it's a Walpole, by the way, not Whirlpool. But if I accidentally said Whirlpool.
What is the distinction?
Of what?
The Bridgewater Triangle?
No, a Walpole and a Whirlpool.
Walpole is the city that I have to pass. And it's edge of the Bridgewater Triangle. And it's a very swampy area. And driving through it, I could feel the aura of the strangeness of the Bridgewater Triangle that has the Hockomock Swamp in it. A lot of UFOs are seen overhead. So when I'm driving back at night, I'm always looking for UFOs because apparently I'm asking for trouble. And
looking at the photos, it looks like a wet version of the Pine Barrens in New Jersey.
Yeah, it is a lot. There's no cell service. You go in there at your own risk, hoping that you can get out. And there's
why no
a
cell
lot
service? Is it just the geography of the place?
I think it's the geography, and also there isn't very good cell service, at least here in Rhode Island. And there's just not a lot of cell towers put up. So
I wonder why. I mean, is there that much mysterious stuff that goes on in the area, the Hockomock Swamp?
Oh yeah, there is.
There's a lot of legends that come from the area. Like H.P. Lovecraft, he loved the Bridgewater Triangle area, Hockomock. I did a TV show down in East Bridgewater a few months ago. And I was blown away how desolate it was. And I went to Brockton to go to, and I was coming in from Rhode Island. And I went through and I was blown away how few, there was no light. It was so dark and desolate. Of course people live there, but it's compared to Boston, it's like a whole other world.
Yeah. And that would be a remark I would make about moving to this part of New England, southern New England, is it's a lot swampier than what it's made out to be in media. Rhode Island is basically a gigantic swamp. And delightful during the summer with all the mosquitoes. But with the Bridgewater Triangle, there's even Bigfoot and Thunderbird sightings.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting piece of land.
And
puck wedgies, which I like to blame for anything that goes wrong in my house.
Is a puck wedgie. Huh?
It's a puck wedgie.
There's a redheaded hitchhiker on the stretch of Route 44.
It's not me! This one's one angry dude. But please, can you tell us the story of the redheaded hitchhiker, Sam?
Yeah, I mean, well, my book focuses on Freetown, which doesn't involve the redheaded hitchhiker. But yeah, I mean, supposedly there's a redheaded hitchhiker, which is kind of close. It's more toward the top of the Bridgewater Triangle. He supposedly picks up wayward people. He passes down the street, passes by people, whether they're their car breaks down or whatever, and they see a gentleman. They basically see a gentleman who is hitchhiking on the street with red hair. I think it's the most insane ghost story I've ever heard of. I mean, it doesn't make any sense and it doesn't really interest me, but supposedly people have seen this gentleman many times.
Yeah.
Essentially, he's been trying to pitch his own movie for God knows how long.
He gives exactly. Those redheads a bad name.
They need a lot of help with that. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the spot that I do focus on at Freetown, there's a lot going on there. And there is that's based on fact and not made up stuff, like the redheaded hitchhiker.
Right, because there was the murder of, and I just missed her name, the 15-year-old girl.
Yeah,
Aruda.
Mary Lou Aruda. She was tied to a tree. She was a local. She was a cheerleader. She was a teenager, and she was found. She was basically chained to a tree alive, and she died because of the weight of her head choked her. And that was one of many horrific things that happened in Freetown State Forest.
How much of an ego did she have that her head was so big?
No, the chain went across her neck, right? So that if she tried to sleep, she
died a horrific. She was murdered. It was horrific. And left a psychic imprint in the location.
Yeah.
Now that's something that's just recently happened.
No, it happened like 20 years ago.
Oh, okay.
There was a series.
What, really?
Yeah,
I thought it was more like the 1800s or 17.
No, it was 1978.
Yikes.
Yep. And
now,
there was a series.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, there was a series of things that happened that were believed to be satanic related, like satanic rituals. There was a man who a man and a woman who was a prostitute from Fall River, who committed a lot of heinous crimes in Freetown as well. So there were a lot of horrific murders that happened around the area where Mary Lou Arruda was found, but they were not related.
Hmm.
Was there any documentation of what satanic groups? Are they still active?
No, I mean, the thing is, like, the satanic aspect of it became a part of the coverage of the trial. So there was, I guess, a lone Satanist. But then people started claiming that they saw pentagrams and other types of satanic, black masses happening out there.
Okay.
My opinion is probably a group of kids, and the satanic aspect of it probably was just part of the media kind of blowing it out of proportion. But the way that the murders happened in Freetown State Forest were definitely ritualistic and really sick. What happened to the women that were murdered?
Yeah, it's kind of what I've discovered is something called the cult paranoia that the media really, really, really blew into this big thing here in this area. And from like the late 1970s up to the mid 90s, there was just this fear of the cult paranoia, basically. And we even got little feelers of it in Northern Indiana when anybody was a Metallica or other hardcore metal fan, you would draw some kind of pentagram. Or even if somebody saw a star upside down, people would freak out. And this did not help. It fed the flames of this cult paranoia across the entire country, I think. But this helped start it.
Yeah, definitely if you read the press from the murder trials, it's shocking sort of the language, having been a journalist for 20 years. It's shocking sort of the language that it was like so over the top when they were describing the Satanism and sort of the things that unfolded out in the Freetown State Forest. In some ways, I believe it kind of related to some of the stuff that I've heard about the Salem witch trials, which is what, you know, I feel like things here have a tendency of repeating itself over and over again.
Yeah. And Salem is another big location in the book. And I haven't been there yet.
And, well, I mean, it's one of those places that I will not write a book on Salem because it's sort of like it's Halloween town, basically. It's where everyone comes. It's the most visited city in Massachusetts in October. They have haunted happenings. They have, you know, that's where the witch trials of Theria happened. And so it's a pop culture icon throughout the world. So I actually spent a season giving ghost tours in Salem, and I spent a lot of time researching my third book, Ghost to Salem. And it really is haunted. In some cities I enjoy working in, I did not enjoy working in Salem. It was a lot of weird stuff going on there.
Well, Laurie Cabot and all.
Well, yeah, she's not as active as she was like 20 years ago, but she, there's a lot of new witches that are there. They're kind of vying for airtime.
So what about the Digton Rock?
What rock?
What about Dicton Rock?
The Dicton Rock.
Oh, it's part of the Bridgewater Triangle.
Part of the Bridgewater Triangle.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be written in a whole bunch of different languages.
I don't really know. I know the ones that are featured in my book. I'm more of an expert on Boston and Salem and the North Shore. So I let the other people like Spooky South Coast and Jeff and all those people deal with the Bridgewater Triangle.
Because
I'm not an expert. I'm not from Fall River. Frank Grace is. Frank lives.
Yeah.
He lives in the area, but I'm Boston and Salem and North Shore.
Yeah, that's a different beast to conquer. Bridgewater versus Boston.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
And having spent some time there, I was really there's only two places in the South Shore that that are in my book, and that's the Lizzie Borden's house, which I did not want to put in my book, and then also the Bridgewater Triangle, but sort of the Freetown State Forest, and
right.
It's been so overdone. I didn't want to put it in the book.
Yeah, it's talked about a lot. I think there was even a new movie or documentary that just came out about it recently. The Profile Rock is also very popular, Henry. And I'm trying to remember the name of the old quarry that's there, but people leap from the edge of that a lot. And people see a lot of suicide ghosts.
Really?
Yeah,
the ghosts of people who have committed suicide. Yeah.
I can't even pronounce it, but it's like the Ashtonet state. It's like the quarry. Mm-hmm. It's like where there's a lot of suicides, and that's in the book too.
Yeah.
And then Profile Rock as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's an interesting place with an interesting history. But we can move on to Salem because I know I'm interested in learning about it, and I'm sure our listeners are too.
Most haunted number 6 is the Joshua Ward House.
Right. And they just turned that into a hotel, into a boutique hotel. It's called The Merchant. And they just opened. And I gave tours for, it was 2012, 2013, I gave ghost tours. And, you know, it was one of those places that people, it was always on ghost tours. But then I had an experience there that, while giving a tour, that felt like it was like a burning sensation on my chest. And then after the tour, I lifted up my shirt and there was scratch marks on my chest. And then I was like, I need to pay attention to this place. So that is the George Corwin. That's where he was the sheriff during the witch trials and known as a sadistic man. And he was his remains were there, and supposedly what haunts that structure supposedly it's a woman, a woman that's been in many photographs, and she's angry, and she specifically attacks men. So I had my first encounter with a sort of called a mark of untrinity, was a scratch on my chest.
Really?
Yeah, it was pretty intense.
That's the first time I've heard somebody actually use a phrase to describe this particular phenomena.
Right. And
yeah.
It was the Mark of Trinity, which I talk about in my book. I didn't know what it was either. And so the scratch marks on my chest, some people believe that it was, because there's a lot of conjuring going on in Salem. And that it was somehow like related to something going on, like a spell or conjuring of some sort of a spirit that was conjured, or it could have been actually an active spirit that wanted me not to come up on the grounds, because I got closer than usual to the Joshua Ward House, so it could have been related to that.
Well, now the Joshua Ward House. Was that where the sheriff had lived, George Corwin?
The house that's there is not. It's actually been moved to that location. The George Corwin, he lived there, but the house names in the basement are buried below. They did exhume the remains because Well, actually, they kept him there because he was the most hated man in Salem. And they were worried about people tearing his body into pieces after he died because people hated him. He was so sadistic towards all the innocents who were accused of witchcraft. And he was buried there and supposedly haunts that location. But we think it's a woman that's haunting the location.
So apparently they tore this guy apart just to make sure he was doubly sure he was dead, I guess. Or...
No, they wanted to tear him apart because he was so sadistic. Yeah. They buried him in the basement. They buried him in beneath the basement to keep him away from people tearing him apart.
Yeah.
His nickname was the Strangler because he would chain people up and to where they would choke to death.
Yeah, he was very sadistic. The Strangler myths, I don't necessarily know if that's true. Of course, people blow things out of proportion. He supposedly with Giles Corey, who was the gentleman who was pressed to death mm-hmm. over a two-day period, George Corwin stood over him. And, as Giles Corey was a stubborn old man, and he would say, more weight. And, George Corwin would, his tongue would fall out of his mouth and he would put it back in with a cane. So he was just a really sadistic, mean man. He kind of got his jollies off of people being tortured.
And you say that house has now been made into a hotel?
Yeah, it's a high-end hotel called The Merchant. And I haven't stayed in. They just opened. And I'm curious to see if they've had any paranormal encounters or experiences because it's supposedly one of the most haunted locations in Massachusetts. So I'm assuming they have, but you never know.
But we're not sure the lady who's haunting it, what her story is, correct?
Right. Yeah, we don't know. And we know that we've seen her in photos. We've heard many, many accounts of this woman. We don't know if she was seeking post-mortem justice or if she was one of the people accused, or if she's, a doppelganger. You never know. I mean, she could be something that's mm-hmm. been placed there to protect that house.
Well, I often wonder if the Trinity Mark, if you want to call it that, they maybe recognized how sensitive you were, and that was trying to keep you away.
Yeah, it was pushing me away. Yeah, I felt a burning sensation and I didn't feel scratched. I felt like I was like something was burning, like a tingling sensation on my chest. And I lifted my shirt up and it was very profound that it was a scratch mark and it was like kind of welts on my chest. This is after the tour and I instead of freaking out, I kind of was like, what the hell is that? I mean, it was more like, what is that? It went away pretty quickly. It went away the next day. So I didn't take pictures or shoot video of it. It's just something that happened on a tour. And truthfully, I was a little wary of giving tours after that because I didn't want it to happen again. So I kind of stayed away from the Joshua Ward House after that encounter.
Hmm.
Well, they haven't dealt with him as a character in the very sensationalized Salem TV series that they've been doing. At least not yet.
Yeah, I don't think that series is based on fact at all. I think it's purely fiction.
It is. I mean, it's complete nonsense, but they're using a lot of actual historical people and events to convey what was happening at the time and that there was real magic and actual witches who were trying to destroy the world and blah, 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 blah. So it's like kind of a Teen Wolf kind of a style, very stylized American Horror Story is successful. Let's make one about Salem kind of a show.
Yeah, I watched the first episode, but I haven't watched it since, so I don't really. But what I gathered from the first episode, people that are historians or people that are they were pretty upset about their portrayal of what really happened. I don't think they present themselves as what as truth or as fact.
No, it's complete. It's complete.
We made up.
Yeah, it's completely made up, and it's done very, a lot of Hollywood witches where, you know, when you say witch, it's always the scary people who actually have telekinetic abilities and magic and stuff like that, as opposed to these poor people who are being falsely accused and killed right and left, sometimes just to get their property.
There was a lot of, I mean, what's good about Salem is you can talk about the paranormal and people get what you're saying. So there's a lot of people like me and in Salem, and there's also a lot of people who are Wiccan, and there's definitely the stereotypes that I grew up with of witches, and based on people that I know in my life, it's very much not true. But there's a stigma. I mean, my friends who are Wiccan are kind of wary of being open about it because of sort of the puritanical views in Massachusetts about, and the stereotypes people have about witches.
Well, a lot of witches and neo-pagans and witches refer to themselves as Wiccan to sound not scary, because witchcraft as religion is just the duality of nature and the love of God and goddess and nature and such like that. And Wiccans are a little bit more fluffy bunny, white light, rainbows and unicorns sometimes. Right. Whereas witches, they're pretty much, like they say, all witches are pagans, but not all pagans are witches. So a lot of times exactly. They have to be, like I say, they have to be careful as to out to whom they come, as it were. So they have to be a little careful about that. But yeah, when I hear somebody refer to somebody as a witch, I point out, you know, witch is actually a religion, and you might as well say Jew or Hindu, you know, if you're going to use it as an epithet.
All I can say, Jeff, is you made Wiccans sound like they should be drinking spiced pumpkin lattes.
Who said they aren't?
That's true. But the fluffy bunnies with rainbows also.
Exactly. Well, I can picture, even though she's a flat-out witch, I can picture Marla eating having pumpkin spice latte.
Spice latte, yeah. Yeah. I thought I'd just point that out, that okay, the image of a Wicca in my head has
out of
now
a Starbucks
been
cup, yeah.
Changed, yeah.
Well, remember, I've been very, you know, I've got a lot of pagan and witch friends right out here in California. It's not much in the way of stores anymore. There are two major stores right now. You got Panpipes here in Hollywood, and you've got the Green Man store in North Hollywood. You used to have Raven's Flight, and that had fantastic open rituals. But that's as they call them, witch wars, which essentially is, you know, some people just against each other, and that happens. So that store eventually just sort of fell apart. But and Green Man, I haven't frequented enough to know what kind of politics is the wrong word, but you know what I mean.
I think we're going to go ahead and take our last break. So let's see, Jeffrey will get to take us out, and Barbara will bring us back.
Yep. Well, you're listening to The Paranormal View on para-x.com with your hosts, Henry Foister, Kat Cloco, Ceiling Cat Barbara Duncan, and myself, Jeffrey Gould, and tonight's guest, paranormal investigator and author Sam Baltrusis. Stay tuned for more of The Paranormal View after the break.
Don't go away. The Paranormal View will be right back.
Hi, I'm Rosalind Bound, and you are listening to The Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network.
Rat, where are you going?
I'm going back to The Paranormal View, back where I belong.
Please, take me with you.
No, I'm through with everything here. I want to see if there's something left in life I haven't explored. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, Rat, don't run to them. They talk about ghosts and hauntings. UFOs and all kind of supernatural scary stuff.
You'll never understand, will you, Scarlet?
No!
Well, that's your misfortune.
Rhett, if you go, where shall I go? What shall I do?
Frankly, my dear. Line.
You gotta be kidding.
That's the Paranormal View with your host, Henry Foister, Jeffrey Gould, Kat Kloko, and Barbara Duncan. Every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on the Para-X Radio Network.
There's a darkness in the hallway. Voices that seem to come from nowhere. Alone at night, there is a feeling that something or someone is near. Where can you go? Who can you turn to? Para-X Radio and the all-new Para-X Vision can help. Our knowledgeable host and expert guest can help you find some answers and take a glimpse into the unknown. Para-X Radio and Para-X Vision, programming for the open mind.
Millions of people are affected by the Para-X bug.
I realize that it is something that will stay with me for the rest of my life and long into the afterlife as well.
If you have the Para-X bug, there is hope.
With a nightly visit to the Para-X website and intensive past life regression therapy, I can control it.
Even with the Para-X bug, I can still lead an active life of radio show hosting, paranormal investigating, evidence checking, attending conferences, book writing, keeping up with the latest technology, and still keep my 40-hour-a-week day job.
If you think that you have the Para-X bug or know someone who might, visit para-x.com. And remember, you are not alone.
I am not alone.
I
am not alone.
The Para-X bug may cause the urge to chase shadow people, visit exotic haunted locations, adopt a pug wedgie, or spend all of your time trying to figure out the laws and principles of paranormal investigation. Listening to Para-X may increase these effects.
Sudden visions of full-body apparitions or feeling the covers being pulled off you in the middle of the night by unseen hands may also be signs of exposure to the Para-X bug.
The use of Para-X may be habit-forming, and an overwhelming desire to provoke spirits may be a serious side effect. If these symptoms last more than 4 hours, you should quickly consult a trusted witch and have her cast a "What the hell are you thinking?" spell on you. If symptoms persist, please contact the Para-X Radio Network Homeland Security Team for further instructions.
The Para-X bug may cause urges for late-night speaking with spirits and ghosts. Listening to Para-X may increase these effects. Overwhelming desire to try provoking a spirit may be a serious side effect. Those with Para-X bug effects lasting more than 4 hours should consult Para-X or see a professional. Sudden outbursts at the mention of orbs may be a sign of exposure to the Para-X bug. Use of Para-X may be habit-forming. Use caution when engaging in Para-X chat.
Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
They're creepy and they're kooky, mysterious and spooky. They all talk gobbledygooky, the Para-X family. The shows are paranormal, not stuffy but informal. The topics are abnormal, the Para-X family.
They're strange, deranged, unrestrained.
So grab your favorite brew, it's time to rendezvous, as we give awards to the Para-X family.
And welcome back, everybody, to the Paranormal View here on Para-X Radio. We want to thank you for joining us this evening, both in the chat room and listening from all around the world. And tonight we have listeners in, the United States, the United Kingdom, Canada, Saudi Arabia, Australia, the Philippines, Costa Rica, and Unknown is back.
Oh, the Unknown is back. All right.
Yeah.
Yes. Welcome back, Bigfoot.
Yeah. Because they want to hear more exciting stories from...
You said Australia between Costa Rica? That was
Philippines.
Yeah, I believe the
unknown. Oh, Philippines. That's what I missed. Okay.
The unknown is listening in Bridgewater Triangle.
Could very well be.
Could be.
They want to listen to our guest tonight, author Sam Beltrusis, author of 13 Most Haunted in Massachusetts. And I want to talk a little bit, because I never believed that graveyards were that haunted, but you have one in your book, The Spidergate Cemetery.
Yeah,
which
it's
delightful. Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird that you think, because I agree with you that cemeteries usually aren't haunted, and people want to go to the cemeteries to, you know, commune with the dead or with ghosts, and pretty much that's, you know, they're not active. Cemeteries are where people, you know, where the dead go to visit. It's sort of like it's something that they just stop by. But Spidergate Cemetery, it's kind of, it's mythic. You've heard so many stories about it, of, you know, like all these crazy things that happened out there, including, you know, satanic rituals and, you know, a boy that allegedly hanged himself and all these crazy stories and animal sacrifices. And I'm going to actually go out and see for myself, and not even thinking that it was going to make the book. And so I went out with me and with Frank C. Grace, who's a photographer and a camera person. And we actually had a pretty weird experience there. It was this man came out of the blue, and supposedly Liz Tagle, who is my camera person, she dropped her keys, and this man kind of came out of the woods and gave her keys and left. So we had this bad experience, and plus with, you know, we had our cameras, the batteries drain out there, and just the feeling of we wanting to leave. So I did include it in the book, and I still am wary of the stories because some of them are so over the top, but I do think that it's active.
Now, they actually handed the keys back to.
Yeah. So it was a man, but the thing is, where did this man come from? It was it's like a very wooded area. It's near Worcester, and that's another city that no one could pronounce. And it's actually in Leicester. I pronounced it Leicester, but it's Leicester. This guy just came out of nowhere and gave her keys back. And Liz, who was a skeptic, she's like, who? And he looked skeletal. He looked, you know, we thought perhaps maybe he was living in the woods or something. So we think he was a human. It was just so strange that happening. And, you know, there are reports of a gatekeeper, and we're like, maybe that's the gatekeeper to the Spidergate Cemetery. But it's a Quaker burial ground. And again, it's, you know, typical for Puritans to demonize the Quakers. They did not like the Quakers. So I'm not surprised that a Quaker burial ground is supposedly like a demonic burial ground.
What's the story behind the Eighth Gate of Hell?
Well, supposedly, like if you actually go, because first of all, you go down, it's like this really desolate, in the middle of the woods cemetery. So you go down, you get devoured by mosquitoes, and kind of getting, you know, what was said earlier about the it's very swampy. There are a lot of like running, babbling brooks and all that type of thing. So you go there. Mm-hmm. It looks beautiful. It's like this little picturesque cemetery in the middle of Leicester. And supposedly, like, there's all these stories. Like, there's a gravestone, Marmaduke Earl is his name. If you walk around his gravestone 10 times at midnight, something weird will happen, or he'll talk to you. There's a center of the cemetery where supposed satanic rituals were held, and that's where I guess the Eighth Gate of Hell came from. And it looks like it is a platform, and supposedly people swear that that's where all these rituals were performed. And if you look at the history of it, actually that's where the meeting house originally was. So I think a lot of it is made up, but it's possible that there were rituals that happened there.
Now, one of the
so the hanging tree wasn't actually used for legal hangings. It was just a story of a young boy.
It was just a story.
Suicide?
Yeah, like there's a boy that's called the hanging tree, that a boy committed suicide, And there are pictures of a boy, of an entity there that supposedly, you know, that people caught on camera. I did not experience this entity. There were several murders, not there, but in the general vicinity, that people have kind of hijacked and moved over to the cemetery, involving a kid that was murdered and buried in a culvert that is said happened there, but it actually did not happen at that cemetery. It happened about a half a mile away.
Okay. Sorry, Jeff.
I was just going to say one of the, yeah, can you hear me? Can you hear me? Yeah. Oh, now you can't hear me. One of the web pages I saw says that people aren't allowed in Spidergate Cemetery anymore.
Yeah, you have to get approval
since 9/11, which is kind of an odd thing for them to say.
Yeah, there was a period where they people were not allowed to go there. They've been a lot more relaxed the past like five. That was about 7 years ago. When they stopped, they started like banning people from the cemetery, but they haven't really enforced it recently. In fact, when we were there, there were a lot of visitors that were there that came after the man that appeared like mysteriously out from nowhere. But it's hard to find, so I see why it's in the middle of nowhere. So I can see why there is sort of an interest in it. And it's also very beautiful. It's a very picturesque, beautiful, quaint Quaker cemetery.
Well, it's sort of like one of the things more of the locals know. If you're not a paranormal investigator who finds stuff online, it's not something anyone would just stumble across, like, you know, Bachelor Grove Cemetery in Chicago or something, like, oh, there's that famous, you know, here's something out in the middle of nowhere.
You're not going to run into Bachelor's Grove in Chicago, Jeff. It's in the middle of the forest.
Well, I don't know where it is.
Sorry. Go ahead, Sam.
Yeah, this place is very, very hard to find. In fact, Frank C. Grace he's actually never been there himself, so we both were going out. He kind of guided me through the woods to find this hidden cemetery, so it's really difficult to find.
I actually found there's this little disused cemetery in the middle of nowhere, Tawako, New Jersey, which I came across. I thought, oh, look, there's this odd little cemetery just sitting there. There's no gate or anything, just headstones. And my friends and I went in, and the most no dates, but just my surname is on one of the headstones. And I'm like, all right, that was very creepy. We were like, okay, that was not expected. No relation. Okay, I don't know of any other, you know, of mine around there. So I'm like, okay.
So Quaker.
Yeah, I've never.
Do they have
just me, or has people gone silent?
No, we all went silent because we all had a moment of contemplation, I guess. just thinking about finding our names on a headstone, and I've never seen another Cloco, so and I've never found another Fuller, to be honest. So anyway, Spidergate's I know of. It's one of those notorious urban legend.
Next time I'm in New Jersey, I'll get a photo.
Yeah, please do.
Not only that, but my favorite is in my own hometown. It literally has the name Boob, B-O-O-B.
And then
below that
is the cemetery stuff.
Yeah. I was like,
you get things like headstones with brain on it, which is a name, and you find ones with Waldo. There's just odd.
Oh, you find them somewhere.
Yeah, there's a cemetery in Columbus, Ohio that just has.
I like the photo that's. It has what?
Specimens.
Oh.
That's what's on the headstone.
There's one that from the, like, some. It's a meme now. But it's this very worn headstone. It simply says, "The doctor," and then in quotation marks, "he saved people a lot." and the person memeing it saying, where... every time I turn around, it's a...
I wasn't aware Boston Common was a gravesite.
Yeah, it's a mass grave. It was the You mentioned the hanging tree. That's where the hanging tree in Boston was. So that's where a lot of people were hanged for various crimes. So they would dump the bodies in Boston Common.
Holy smoke.
Yeah. And we talked about witches. That, you know, we know about the Salem witch trial hysteria, but Boston had three women that were accused of witchcraft as well before the 1690s. It was there was Anne Hibbins, there was Margaret Jones. Anne Hibbins wasn't a witch. She was a witch with a B. She was the town gossip. And then there was Margaret Jones, who was, she would make these concoctions that were like Pepto-Bismol, so she was an herbalist. And there was a woman named Goodwife Glover, who was accused of being a witch. And she was basically one of my favorite characters in, you know, Boston legend or Boston lore. She didn't know English very well. She immigrated from Ireland, and she was given a test to say the Lord's Prayer. Which is the test they gave. And all the players that were part of the Salem witch trials area, they were part of the Boston, which the trial, or the sort of the mock trial of Goody Glover. And she was accused of being a witch, and she was hanging in the Boston Common, and she supposedly haunts the Boston Common. That's the ghost that's there.
Oh, so that's why you need to have a shotgun. Oh, wait, no.
So it would be all criminals would be simply executed and buried within the commons?
Yeah, there was all the various crimes, and then there was accused witches. They did not like peace. They did not like you. You would probably end up hanged. You know, so yeah. There was one man, this is ridiculous, but he was accused of stealing a squirrel in Boston Common that was hanged. They did not like gossip, and they would generally accuse those women of being witches if they gossiped. And if you were Quaker, again, the Quakers were demonized by the Puritans, and they definitely did not like pirates. They had a very, that's in my next book, Haunted Boston Harbor. A lot of pirate hangings and crew contraptions designed by the Puritans to act as cautionary tales to ward off other pirates.
Well, pirate stories are the best.
So, yeah. So they would just men just as much as they would the women.
I do feel like it was misogynistic. I mean, a lot of it, if you defy the Puritans in their Protestant Puritan beliefs, they did not like Catholics, for example. So there was Catholic men and women. They did not like. It didn't matter. They did not like you for whatever reason. Usually it's because of religious intolerance, which is kind of ironic because they fled to America to get away from that. But they did not like you if you were different.
We don't take kindly to people who are, you know, it's like that line on South Park. We don't take kindly to whatever fill in the blank.
Now, you have another one, another place called the Witch House, which was Judge Jonathan Corwin's home. He was the judge during the witch trials. Now, they didn't do any of the trials there at his house, but he was the judge that proceeded, I guess, over the proceedings.
He was one of the judges. The house is it's the only remaining structure that has ties to that era, and it it's been featured on Ghost Adventures. They did a lockdown in the house, and supposedly, you know, a lot of the Ghost Adventures lockdowns, I've gone to the locations after they've been there, and I'm not saying that the Ghost Adventures crew conjures up activity, but it seems to be it was very active after they left. Let's put it that way. They did. If you watched the episode, they did a bloodletting to summon the spirits in the house. And they basically used a blood ritual, which is the common thing, to summon a spirit, and it's been active ever since. So yeah, it's on my list. My experiences there were pretty minimal, but a lot of it was based on other people who had experiences there. It's a major tourist attraction.
Yeah, Corey's curse was leveled against the sheriff, wasn't it? That every sheriff who was elected to Salem would die.
Yeah, that's the legend, and I totally thought that was hogwash when I heard about that. But yeah, according to it's in my book, but it's like according to legend, he cursed the sheriff and Salem. And people say that if something bad is about to happen to Salem, that they'll see General Corey's spirit. Usually it's around the Howard Street Burying Ground, which is where he was executed. And they'll see his spirit, and he's sort of like a precursor to something horrible happening to Salem. And, you know, I didn't – having spent a lot of time there, there's definitely bad mojo there. And I don't know if it's, you know – if it dates back to the 1600s or if it's something that's recent, but there's definitely, you can feel the energy, and it's a negative, it could be a negative energy. Some people feel that their batteries are charged there. I feel very drained when I go there.
You can see how Lovecraft got that sense too, and could write so much and got a lot of inspiration, I assume.
One of his stories, stories is actually called Dreams of the Witch House.
Yeah, Arkham, I think it's he definitely alludes to it, and the witch house is iconic in regards to back in Nathaniel Hawthorne's era. It's been around ever since, and I don't think Nathaniel Hawthorne refers to the witch house, but I know that he definitely visited it, and it was part of his life because he grew up in Salem.
We got less than a half an hour, so time's just flying by. Let's and I know Kat said that she's been there also, so let's talk a little bit about the USS Salem.
Okay. It is a cool battleship.
A battleship?
Yeah.
Okay.
The USS Salem? Well,
it's a nice little boat, yeah.
Is it got oars or
ghosts or anything?
Yes, Henry, it's hamster-powered. That's how they got to the Mediterranean, an army of hamsters.
Okay, so tell us about the USS Salem. What's some of the things that goes on the ship?
Okay, so basically USS Salem... it was added to my book the last minute. So it was one of those things that was, it's currently in Quincy, and there was talk of moving it to East Boston, possibly moving it to Fall River. So it actually may go closer to where like the Lizzie Borden, the South Shore, but it's kind of it's in really bad shape right now. Never saw battle, but it did go to Greece. It picked up a lot of survivors of a volcano. Earthquake in the Ionian Sea, and then people feel like that the hauntings are related to that. So all the survivors of the earthquake were put into the vessel. A lot of women had children, so there have been reports of women getted out, which could be, you know, this is in the birthing room of the boats. My friends Rachel Hoffman and Tina Storer, who are part of the paranormal expedition, the team that investigated, that's their home haunt. So they have a lot of stories. They tell me that the ghosts on the vessel are misogynistic, so they're kind of anti-women, and they're kind of old school. So they're assuming they're sailors, perhaps still on the vessel. And a lot of reports of abandoned footsteps. And I don't think it's necessarily demonic. I just think there's a lot of energy still left in that vessel.
Yeah.
Oh, I believe it too, because when we have the USS Hornet out here, and part of the reason I think the energy sticks around so much is not only are there ghost hunts, but it's on salt water.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And if it's still in the water, I think that retains quite a bit of the energy.
Yeah. And there's an interesting entity on the boat, which is on, where is he? Besides on the boat, I'm trying to remember which he's on the third deck, and I think it's It's where the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts now use as their bunk rooms. But it's where they actually brought in all of the Greeks who were injured and affected by the earthquake. They brought them into this area for safekeeping. And some of them were horribly burned from just explosions, gas mains breaking on the island. So they were brought in, and one of the entities seen, and I think I heard him, is known as the Burning Man. And I can imagine what he looks like in my head, which is just this human form that has skin melting off of him, and he reeks of just burnt flesh. And I actually investigated the USS Salem this past September, and it's a big Des Moines class heavy cruiser. It's not small in any imagination, but it's not the biggest Navy vessel you can get on. And I was there with a few other people, more like 20 other people. But anyway, Frank Grace is one of them. And this woman had an interesting, I'm going to call it a ghost box app on her phone, but it took it. It was almost like a real time voice recorder, which you didn't have to rewind back to hear if somebody was speaking to you from the other side. And we got what, Jeff?
So it's sort of like recorded and played back delay time? Sort of?
Yeah, it's like a real-time voice recorder. I don't know if anyone else has used one of those before. It's very similar to that. And we were playing it, and you can hear, one, people snoring as they are sleeping in bunks that no one was sleeping in at the time, which was really amusing because it started wondering about like quantum mechanics and if we were listening to people in the future or in the past sleeping in this place. But after that would die down, we would suddenly just get screams, blood-curdling screams. It was very crazy, and we think it was him, because as we would hear this scream howl go on through the audio, the entire room felt very oppressive. And there's only been a few places where I've ever felt that something not so great was trying to come in. But here's an interesting thing for you, Sam. My grandfather was on that ship.
Really?
Was on the
Yes.
I did not know that. That's awesome.
On the USS Salem, which is something I discovered as I texted my family members saying, "Hey, this is where I am." And one of my family members texted back, "Hey, by the way, did you know your grandfather was on this ship in 1956?" And I was like,
Wow.
So that was, it's a very interesting, interesting connection that I didn't expect to make that evening. And the interesting thing is there was an intelligent shadow person who came to me and Andrew Lake, who's another paranormal author here in New England. We're just shooting the breeze, talking about writing and just industry stuff. And the shadow person walks up to us. And it was intelligent. It followed us around the petty quarters or the petty officers' quarters. And it lasted about 15 minutes on and off. And then that occurred, that's when I discovered my grandfather served on the boat. Yes, Jeff?
He's essentially a shadow person just going, "Can I be in your book? Can I be in your book? Can I?
Yeah, basically.
So I'm not running. I actually found something similar. I didn't know where my great great grandfather, my maternal side, where they came from, and I found out that my family's from back to in the 1600s and from Newport, Rhode Island. So I'm actually originally from this part of the country. I never would have thought that because I grew up in Florida, so I never would have thought that I would come back to my homeland. But that I found myself like 6-7 months ago, and it was. I actually was able to, when I went to Newport recently, I was able to see the gravestones of my family from the 1600s, 1700s, and it was pretty surreal.
Wow.
And it was kind of interesting to know that I came back to New England, where my lineage came from.
Mm-hmm. Do you know how far they didn't come over in the Mayflower or anything, did they?
No, they're not that old. No, it was more of like my grandfather was from Ireland, and he came over in the 1700s and married a family that was already established. So, the family was in Portsmouth, and they were also in Newport, Rhode Island.
Wow, that is really neat.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's one of those things that, like, I love finding that stuff out. You know, it's it's kind of the ghosts lead us sometimes, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. It's very neat seeing these family ties, and just as you're looking, researching in the most random of places. So that's cool.
Yeah. So the shadow figure. Yeah. The Salem. I'm actually worried about the Salem because I'm worried that they are not going to find a home for it. And currently in Quincy, it's not doing well. And they did open it up this past season for tours, and there's talk of moving it to Fall River, and it was supposed to actually move to East Boston, but I guess that fell through. So I'm kind of worried about the fate of the USS Salem, and I think the ghosts are too.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. It is interesting, because I think, isn't it the sister boat to the USS Indianapolis?
Yeah, I didn't know. And yeah. That's in Fall River, right?
Yeah. And but it's intact, unlike the Indianapolis. So it's a really neat piece of American naval history, and I'm sure a home can be found for it. I'm not too learned on what all the situation is with the boat or the ship, but
it's definitely the docking area. So it's currently in Quincy, and there were some issues with the docking area not being safe. So they were going to move it to Boston Harbor, which is my turf, where I spent a lot of my time. And we're right by the from East Boston. So it was going to be docked in East Boston. And that's a really high tourist location. It would probably give it new life if it was brought in. Because there's also the Constitution, too, which also was very haunted. So the USS Constitution's in Charlestown, and this would be in East Boston. So I think it's more about and it's so big that I think that they're worried about real estate and how much space it's going to take.
Okay. Yeah, that's tricky.
And it was built in Quincy, so it's in its home port. So that's where it was built.
Yeah, and they even took it out of cold storage, basically, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, they've done a good job. They've actually opened it up to paranormal investigators, and they've opened it up to Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, and people to learn about the history. I think it's merely location. I think if they move it to the Boston or even to Fall River, I think it would definitely give it new life, and hopefully, it should be historical. It should be preserved, and money should be put into it to repair it, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I know when I was a Girl Scout, I was on the USS Silversides, and that was an incredibly fun overnight trip. So I can imagine just generations after me would have fun going on the USS Salem, which is it's just really neat. There's a bunch of museums on it, but you're right, getting down there onto Quincy Harbor is very scary. And also, the stupid entrance is on a roundabout. And
exactly.
I missed it. And you just keep going, and you're like, oh, look, I'm driving on a bridge, which happens to be right over where the USS Salem is docked. Huh, how did I get here? So then you have to make an incredibly bad turnaround and try again. But that probably is not helping either.
Yeah, and I think if it finds a new home, I think it will, open up a whole new world to it. I'm a little wary of like recommending it to like the Girl Scouts or Boy Scouts because it's very haunted. So I don't know if it's a good thing to. I mean, I think a lot of kids are pretty unaware of the paranormal, but some of them are, and I can imagine the great ghost stories that they're able to tell each other.
Yeah.
While staying the night on the USS Salem.
Yeah. Well, the Silver Sides that I mentioned, I saw a ghost on it, but I didn't realize it was a ghost for years until I was talking to another investigator from Michigan who routinely investigates the Silver Sides. And he was just like, yeah, they always report this man walking up and down into this bunking area. And he's seen routinely. And I'm like, huh. And then when I started thinking back, I was just like, it was a Girl Scout trip, which means everyone there was female on this particular trip. And even the docents for it were female. And then yet I saw a man, hi Wheatley, in the middle of the night walking up and down the bunks. And it never fazed me. I never put two and two together until I was speaking to this investigator. So...
Yeah, that's pretty creepy.
Yeah, it is creepy when you think about it later, but he was wearing the cotton bell-bottom pants, and I could tell that I knew that he wasn't real, but yet, or not real, but not going to do anything. He wasn't a living person, let me just say that.
Right.
But it's just the two did not mix. This is welcome to young cat's brain, everyone. It's just cat sees a ghost and she doesn't put it together for like 20 years, but unless the kids see the Burning Man on the USS Salem, I think they're fine.
Yeah, I mean, they're just like The Shining, you know, like Danny Torrance. It's like they're just pictures. And if you,
yeah.
I was a sensitive kid too, and I had a lot of scary things happen to me that I didn't know what they were. And in hindsight, I was able to kind of like, oh, that was, I mean, I have a lot of that I've written about, but I was a extremely sensitive kid. And, you know, not, you think that these, like the Burning Man, like if I would see the Burning Man, I probably would, you know, not be able to sleep or freak out. But then like Danny Torrance, like they're not going to hurt you. They're just pictures. They're just impressions. And I try my best just to work with residual hauntings, because a lot of the, that we're talking about tonight are residual hauntings and they're not intelligent entities. But I have encountered intelligent entities as well. So I'm definitely okay with the residual. I'm not as okay with the darker, scarier stuff. That's because I'm so sensitive. I have to be really careful.
Yeah. No, I understand. Welcome to the Sensitive Kid Club.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not me, though.
No, you are sensitive. You saw shadow people when I did not, sir. Do not give me this, I never see anything when we go do any of the ghost hunts. Because that's exactly how Henry speaks in my head. His accent, God, and his voice pitches up. Anyway, yeah. Because you were the one who saw the shadow people at Hillview this past, what was it, October? Or
yeah, you know, I seen a shadow. I couldn't say it was a shadow person because it didn't have a shape, but it blacked out the
light. You turned to me and stated, Kat, I just saw a shadow person leave the morgue.
Yeah, well.
Henry sees ghosts too. He just doesn't like to admit it.
Anyway, we are down to about 10 minutes, actually less, about 5 minutes. Can you say anything in 4 minutes about the Boston Lighthouse on Little Brewster Island?
Yeah, I mean, I Frank Grace and I actually were able to go out there. It's going to be, again, in my upcoming book, Haunted Boston Harbor, which is coming out in 2016. A lot of legend associated with it. People, when Frank and I went there, we didn't really investigate, but we did talk to people that were on the island, and everybody that was on the island had a ghost story. So it was down last season, 2014. It was they were able to visit it. On 2015, it's coming up on its 300-year anniversary. The ghosts are not negative energies. It's very positive. There was a death on the shore of Little Brewster. the first light keeper, George Worthy Lake, and his family. And we believe it's a residual haunting from that tragic death. There was also a heroic save there, a gentleman named Shadwell. He was an African-American slave who was at Longboat when the boat capsized in the Boston Harbor. And he tried to save the people, but he couldn't save the people and the Worthy Lakes. And he kind of forgot in history, but this African-American slave died trying to save the Worthy Lakes. So the ghost, they believe, is a little girl screaming, Shadwell, Shadwell, Shadwell.
Hmm. Now, how big is the island? Is it just big enough for the lighthouse, or is there other families that live on it?
It's very, very small. It's like, it's basically, it's a small drumlin, 1.5 acres. So it's definitely just a lightkeeper. Sally is on the island, and they have people, volunteers and Coast Guard, et cetera, who are on the island regularly. But she actually stays, there's only one person that's on the island, you know, year round. Hmm. Sally Snowman.
So out of all the places that you have in your book, which one do you feel is the most active or the most haunted?
I think it definitely changes. I would say the S.K. Pierce Victorian Mansion and Gardner. I mean, the one that I made number one of my book. I'm working on the 13 most haunted in New York City coming up for next year. And I just went to Ellis Island off the shore of Manhattan, and it's considered Jersey, so I'm sure Jeff will like it. But Ellis Island was so active, it made me physically ill. So and that's where the hospital that was abandoned for about 50 years, the immigration hospital. So I think you're going to see a lot of, to me, the most haunted haunts that I've ever experienced coming up in my next books. Ellis Island, definitely. S.K. Pierce Victorian Mansion, of all the things I've done in my past. I think USS Salem is definitely up on high on the list. I mean, there's the Burning Man, like all the stories that Kat was talking about earlier. It's been investigated a lot, but there's a lot going on in that vessel. I think it's going to definitely get more active because it's been destroyed. We don't know what's going to happen to the Salem. So the ghosts wanted to save the vessel. So I would say the Victorian Mansion in my upcoming book, definitely Ellis Island. And there's also in Staten Island, there's Sailor Snug Harbor that I visited that was extremely, extremely active.
Hmm. And you say that comes out next year?
Yeah, it's coming. It's probably going to come out in May or June of 2016.
Well, that's this year.
Yeah, 13 Most Haunted in New York City. Yeah. And Sailor Snug Harbor was where a lot of the people who retired from the military, it's kind of like an old folks home for sailors. And a lot of craziness happened there. And when I went there, it was very active. And again, I'm not an investigator, but it was just, the energy was so intense.
So when that new book comes out, maybe we can get you back on the show.
Yeah. I would love to talk about it. Cause I lived in New York City, you know, for like 8 years, on and off 8 years, and it's been interesting coming back to going back to a city that I basically fled from because it almost destroyed me. It was had an attachment there that I didn't really know what was going on. So I would love to talk to you about that.
Well, there ought to be a lot of history because back in the 20s and 30s when they had all the gang wars and everything going on, I'm sure that there was a lot of bloodshed, and there's probably a lot of mobsters running around in spirit.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely has a lot of history there that hasn't been explored yet, so I'm looking forward to it.
Well, since we are getting close, just a few minutes, is there anything else you guys want to ask Sam?
Of the places that you visit, do you get premonitions frequently of what you're going to find there?
No, that's good. But no, I mean, it's rare. I did for the S.K. Pearson Victorian Mansion. That came through a dream. I did for Ellis Island. I couldn't do it. I couldn't go into the hospital. So some places are, I go purely on, I go without knowing. And other times I'm kind of warned by the spirits not to go there. And that usually to me indicates a number one slot on my most haunted list. if I have a premonition. So like with S.K. Pierce, same thing. It was very profound. And then same with Ellis Island. Ellis Island wasn't even going to be on my list. And then after what happened during our research for the project, it just kind of, and I visited there a lot when I was a kid, and we would visit, you know, pretty much every year. So I have experience there, but I never went into the abandoned hospital, but there's so much energy in that hospital.
Mm-hmm. My other question was going to be, is there ever a place that you just went to the front door and said, no, I'm not going in?
Ellis, I don't think so. Yeah, yeah. The hospital. Yeah. Ellis, and hopefully when it gets warmer, I'm probably going to be able to make it through. My photographer, which in this book, it's not going to be Frank Grace, it's Jason Baker. Jason Baker was able to go through, but he got physically ill. And he's not sensitive. And he got physically ill walking through. He was vomiting everywhere. It was that intense.
Wow.
So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, the immigration hospital in Ellis Island, yes, that's one place that I cannot do.
Well, Sam, I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us. I want you to give out your sites, how people can get a hold of you, and where they can get your books at, and all the good information. And then we want you to stay on till after we're off, and we'll talk with you for a minute.
All right, awesome. Yeah, the website is 13mosthaunted.com. You can also go to bostonhaunts.com, HAUNTS.com, or cambridgehaunts.com. Every book has its own website, so you can look at Boston Haunted, Boston Harbor is one of them, and then also A Ghost of Salem is one of my websites as well. You can look for my books on Amazon. Type in Sam Baltrusis, Baltrusis, and you'll be able to find all four of my books.
All right. Very good. You're also on Facebook.
I'm on Facebook, yeah. It's more my friends.
All right. Jeff?
Yes, you can go to my website, which is jeffgould.net. GEOFFGOULD.net. And if you add /2011PNV.htm, that's my Paranormal View hub page where you can. Oh, am I cutting in and out again?
Yeah.
Am I cutting in and out?
Just keep going.
Go to the. Okay. JeffGould.net, 2011PNV.htm, my Paranormal View hub page. That'll take you to previous shows, links to each show's respective report page, so you can get all the links to Sam's sites, to his books and such like that, and the various topics we discussed tonight. And I'm on Twitter at Real Badger, RealBadger. And our official website is theparanormalview.com. We're also on Facebook. Just look us up, The Paranormal View. There we are, community, not magazine. Please like us. I try and put in, you know, interesting, from very weird to sciencey to funny stuff. There you go. All right. Happy New Year.
Okay. You can follow Paranormal View on Twitter at Paraview Radio. You can tweet us any questions during the radio show at that time. You can also follow me at jinxedcomic.com. That's jinxedcomic.com, and jinxcomic on Twitter, and jinxcomic on Tumblr, and just Google it, and that will you will be following my fantasy graphic novel series, Jinxed.
All right. Well, we hope that everyone enjoyed the show tonight. Very interesting. And our time is up. We will see you next week at the same time. So this is Henry Foister.
Jeffrey Gould.
Barbara Duncan.
Cacto.
We will see you next week. Good night, everybody.